I'm Dave Jackson, cryptocurrency and blockchain editorial writer here at StockHouse.com. This is episode 5 in our series of Blockchain Cryptocurrency 101 podcasts. And our mission going forward is to help listeners and investors understand more about emerging blockchain technology and digital currency. Today, we're excited to be joined by one of the blockchain industry's most respected educators, Chase Cedar, co-founder and CEO of the Koi Research Group, a blockchain and cryptocurrency educational company headquartered in Vancouver, BC. Koi employs a group of educators, researchers, and coin specialists that focuses on a niche sector of the industry. Their clients include universities that require information sessions and guest appearances, organizations who want to integrate blockchain solutions to their operations or need to train their employees to use new software, and to help prospective investors properly understand and navigate the industry before they make any unwise decisions. Chase is a graduate of the University of Victoria's Gustafson School of Business and has studied Latin American business from the University Adolfo Ibanez in Viña del Mar, Chile. Thanks for joining us, Chase. How did I do with my Spanish there?
That was great. You got close enough.
Well, before we jump into the wide, wide world of cryptosphere and digital coinage and so forth and so on, and the blockchain in general, can you tell us how you initially became interested in cryptocurrency and blockchain technology?
Yeah, of course. Believe it or not, it actually started in Chile. I was walking down the street. I saw a cryptocurrency, it was a traditional exchange with the Bitcoin Accepted Here logo. I looked into it, asked them what the fees were, did the math behind the scenes, and it turned out using Bitcoin was going to save me 0.5% on every dollar that I brought into whenever I exchanged into the Chilean peso. So although I tried to jump into Bitcoin and make that trade, it was a little more complicated than I first thought. Ended up falling down the rabbit hole, as you speak, in the blockchain, started discovering all these different use cases it could be for it, and the rest is history. That's basically how I got into it all.
That's a very interesting story, a little international flair to it. Now, blockchain, Bitcoin, or crypto mining, they're terms that are now becoming part of the mainstream tech lexicon. As an educator, can you break it down in layman's terms for our investor audience?
Yeah, so in my presentations, that takes up quite a bit of time, but I'll try to distill it as quickly as possible here. So to start, blockchain is a glorified database, except instead of being held by an individual or a company, it has the power to be owned by many. And that's really the difference between distributed and centralized blockchains. So I'm going to start by making one thing very clear. There are multiple blockchains, just like there are multiple databases. There are blockchains that can be owned by many people and blockchains that can be owned by one centralized institution. Now, Bitcoin's blockchain is supposedly owned by everyone. When it started out, it's a main group of a few people that developed it. But as it became its own beast, thousands and thousands of nodes and people came on board and miners to support the network. And that really is a cool phenomenon. And that's what really got me excited about blockchain is this whole connectivity and community around a project. But Bitcoin was one of the very first implementations of blockchain. And it used a process called proof of work to incentivize individuals to contribute to the network. So that's the mining you speak of. And all the miners contribute computational power or hash power to Bitcoin's blockchain or any blockchain that they're helping mine. And they're compensated with coins as a result. They can be new coins. This could be from transaction fees. But right now, Bitcoin's blockchain, you're paid via newly minted Bitcoin. And yeah, so you're saying this phenomenon with mining, everyone wants to get into mining because they think it's going to earn lots of money for them. But realistically, it's just as competitive as many other industries, and you would need to have the economy of scale or the cheapest electricity rates in order to be the most lucrative in that segment of the industry.
And it's an industry that's at this point been best left to the larger bit mining corporations like Bitfury, where they can come in with thousands upon thousands of gigawatts of power or megawatts and the gigawatt power of the computers themselves. That's a big difference, correct?
Yes, yes. They have a pretty big stranglehold on the mining industry right now, which we're hoping can change down the road, because that just adds more issues with centralization and who owns all of the hash power in all of these coins. If you have the most hash power, you will be the most profitable, and other people trying to contribute won't necessarily get their shot.
That's for sure. Now, can you elaborate on your company, Koi Research Group, and explain to our audience what you're all about?
Yeah, of course. It probably helps a bit. We're a grassroots community of researchers and coin specialists that educate investors, and we help businesses integrate solutions into their operations. For the most part, it's just people who are interested and lost and don't know where to start. And we try to guide them along in whatever they're looking for. Now, we keep ourselves pretty busy with three main projects. Our Koi Sultancy, our consultancy angle, where we're helping businesses integrate blockchain solutions. That's like a reward system, or maybe just using a distributed database for anything, for securing parts of their data. But then our second project that we're working on is our Crypto College, which is our online courses for novice students or enthusiasts. And our third project, which we're spending a lot of resources on, is our altcoin map. So it's a map of all the different altcoins separated by sector with information so that you can differentiate a coin from its peers. And that's basically Koi Research Group in a nutshell.
Lots to keep you busy, for sure. So we're seeing traditional commercial investment banks like RBC and National Bank of Canada. They're investing in blockchain technology, not the cryptocurrency side of things so much, but blockchain technology specifically. So why now, and where do you foresee the mainstream or old school investment community going with blockchain?
Well, the why now question I find interesting, because it's been why now for the last couple of years. RBC didn't just start investing in this. RBC has been in researching blockchain for a number of years now, but they're mainly interested in the glorified database angle of it. It's for back-end settlements and data integrity and, you know, overnight rates going back and forth, all the little micro payments going between banks and between institutions. And I'm not saying there isn't a huge opportunity there, because there is, and the ones that can integrate the most efficient solutions will come out on top. But when you compare that to traditional cryptocurrencies, these are worlds apart. A crypto needs a blockchain, but a blockchain doesn't need a crypto. And these big banks and large institutions, they're mainly investing in the technology of blockchain, but they don't fully understand how much crypto is correlated to blockchain, and how basically they're just improving their software, their existing software, but they're not radically changing their business model. And that's the difference between, you know, a fintech company that's using blockchain and enabling everyone to contribute, and, you know, a company just adding an upgrade to their existing operations to be a little more efficient.
Now, as a follow-up to that, there's been a lot of buzz over adoption by traditional businesses. Now, where do you really see that going?
Well, it's slow. Traditional businesses don't fully understand where to implement it. So, like many of these projects, these coins rather, are raising capital or have already raised capital, but they're still building their products. Now, their products, when they're ready for business use, they could be extremely valuable, but we're a little too early still. Some of them are ready, but most of them are, their products need a little more refining before businesses will hear about it and want to integrate it. That being said, we're getting approached by all types of businesses that they understand the technology, but the main issue right now is they don't understand what the best application of it would be for their business and how to do that, essentially.
Can you tell us about, sorry about that.
As for where it's going, I mean, it's going in 1,000 directions at once. when we map out all the different projects, well, there's the marketing industry, there's traditional financial products, there's hundreds and hundreds of different directions you can go with the technology that saying, you know, what's the long-term outcome? Well, the long-term outcome is, you know, six different industries all being disrupted using different implementations of blockchain.
Fair enough. Now, if you let me just switch gears here for a bit. Tell us about your company's crypto courses and how they're designed to educate the novice and the even more advanced crypto investor.
Yeah, so we're trying to be as different as possible with our courses. Right now, we're backlogging a lot of content so that we can release a bunch of courses as soon as possible. Right now, we just have our basic core courses, which teach basically what is a Bitcoin? Where did it start? What is a blockchain? Yada. And then you slowly get deeper and deeper and deeper into the terminology until it all sort of makes sense. As for what we're doing right now, we're targeting it all around exploring the different opportunities in blockchain, because investors are looking into mining, into coins, into all sorts of different angles, but they don't really understand how many opportunities there are and which ones are best for them and their risk tolerance or their expertise.
Now, you've designed something called the Altcoin Map. That sounds cool. So what's it all about?
Yeah, so that's it's a map of coins separated by sector. So an informed investor can make investments based on a coin's correlation to its peers rather than the whole industry. Right now, we're seeing most traders and investors, they just kind of look at their portfolio and they go, oh, I'm up or I'm down in comparison to Bitcoin or US dollars or whatever they're comparing it to. But I have not seen any investors tell me that they're up or down in accordance to the sector that they're investing in. So to give an example, you know, it's 2018 and everyone's discussing privacy and how privacy and all these different websites are sending us emails about their privacy updates. Well, if you think the privacy industry is the industry that's most likely to return your best return on investment, well, which of the 15 privacy coins are you going to be looking at? And of those 15, if you picked one, how's it doing in relation to its peers? So that's really what we're doing with this map. It's a one big data visualization product that will help novice investors conceptualize the size of the industry, and more advanced traders and investors make quick comparisons between similar tokens.
No, it is very cool, and I love the way you've broken it down. So kudos on that one. If you were to advise the new to cryptocurrency investor on the major do's and don'ts of getting into the market, what would they be?
Well, if you're interested and you've been sitting on the sidelines, my biggest piece of advice is get started now. You'll learn far faster just by getting started and learning and asking questions as you go. There are plenty of Facebook groups and online resources and what have you to get involved in, to ask questions and learn more. But if you don't start, you'll always just be watching and you won't be learning as much as you would be if you were involved. Now, getting involved can be following a project. It could be investing. It could be, you know, learning more about mining, but find the place where you're most interested in and get involved.
So what you're saying is that there's hope for even old dudes like me.
There is hope for old dudes as well. but maybe more in the area where traditional finance or traditional industries that you know and understand are being disrupted.
Right. So what do you see are the long-term business opportunities in blockchain, not just in Canada, but throughout the world right now?
Well, like I said before, all these projects are building in such different directions. So the business opportunities are endless. That being said, in the short term, I think it's the most simple implementations of blockchain that will survive and we'll start seeing. So, you know, simple games or simple points within video games that you can start earning tokens, things like that. But in the long term, it'll just be built into apps. But behind the scenes, you won't even know you're using a cryptocurrency at all. It'll just feel like you're using a fintech app.
Right.
And then super long term, that's 10 to 20 years from now. Well, you got to really evaluate your business model and whether you are really providing value between, let's say, a middleman company. Let's say Uber, for example. Uber is just connecting, you know, drivers and passengers. That can be fixed by software, and there's no person that needs to be in the middle of that relationship. So although Uber completely reinvented the taxi industry, while a decentralized platform could completely reinvent Uber just because it's all it is software connecting two people. And basically, most business models connect people or provide a service connecting someone or marketers with viewers. But there's a lot of opportunity for just disintermediation and implementing other solutions, blockchain solutions to go along with it, if that makes sense.
And yeah, and that sort of leads into the next phase of the blockchain. It's been discussed a little bit more recently now is the so-called social good of the projects that are available, especially in emerging, not just emerging technologies, but emerging countries. So where do you see the social good in the blockchain down the road?
Well, basically anyone who has access to the internet has a mobile device, and mobile devices are everywhere in the third world. You may be surprised by if people don't have enough money to feed more than the basic necessities, they'll still have a new iPhone or a new phone of some kind that they can still connect with people and interact. And a lot of commerce happens in the informal market between people in third world countries. So someone will be buying something off the street rather than from a company. And when you're buying something from, say, a street vendor off the street, well, I mean, you're not paying taxes, most likely. The street vendor would be afraid to become more formalized and get that storefront because they would be losing some income from the taxes they're probably not paying. But if you were to integrate a cryptocurrency into this and some blockchain solutions into what they're doing, well, they can run everything from their phone, but have a suite of tools that corporations are using. And they can access markets for cheaper and connect with individuals and basically bundle resources together to buy in bulk or you know, there's so many different use cases that the third world needs it the most. Not to mention countries that can't trust their own currency, but countries that just need more regimented solutions for land titles and for business rights and for paying taxes and transparency. Transparency is a huge, huge issue for a lot of developing countries.
And we've seen the issue of hyperinflation in places like Venezuela and Zimbabwe, where blockchain and cryptocurrency transactions would possibly, if not probably, be the most logical solution for these type of emerging economies. Do you agree?
I agree. The only issue is whether or not the local government agrees as well, because correct, they can create a lot of issues for adoption if they want to. The thing is, if they push too hard, well, you can't really prevent it. You can try your best to avoid it, but you can't fully prevent people from using decentralized solutions. So seeing how the people in these countries adopt these solutions will be very interesting, whether or not they listen to their government's demands or they just build their own solutions or use solutions without any government services in between that.
Mm-hmm. Well, finally, Chase, what do you see as the ultimate future of blockchain and to a lesser extent cryptocurrency and how it really can change the world for the better?
That is a very, very loaded question.
It is.
But the future of blockchain, I think, is in interoperability. Right now, we are seeing all these projects building their own projects. Some of them are partnering with one or two other projects, but down the line, it'll be just like how we integrate, you know, blogs and posts and everything through Facebook, or we, you know, it'll all be linked together. So I can use Bitcoin to pay for a contract from a lawyer that will be saved on a blockchain where I can access it whenever I want and no one can corrupt it. But it's all, you know, all these different services working together to replace traditional businesses.
Well, that's that is sage advice indeed. Now, thanks once again, Chase, for joining us today on our Stockhouse Blockchain Cryptocurrency 101 podcast. I thought it was very informative and entertaining. And once again, thanks for coming on board, and have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave. This has been fun.